Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
This is AVXL episode 16, recorded June 13th, 2016.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content, no matter what your budget is. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
E3 and WWDC going down this week. That's the Worldwide Developers Conference from our friends at Apple. So much gaming news coming this week if you like to game with your home theater in the living room.
Yeah.
And a dog pile of Apple news this morning.
That as well.
And updates on Blu-ray compatibility, 4K Blu-ray compatibility. And I got to say, I was just utterly thrilled.
I love E3.
To see
games.
Yeah. So many games.
Goodness.
You're obsessed with Doom.
Stuff distress a graphics card.
Yeah.
I've been playing Doom this week. Picked it up, finally. Couldn't wait for the patches or a sale. No, I had to buy it like week of it comes out. What an incredible soundtrack. Number one, if you've got good graphics hardware, you can crank up the settings in this game, and It looks beautiful. Particulate effects like smoke and steam and things like that. Mm-hmm. If you can crank up the settings all the way, look awesome. And I read a brief article about the person who did the audio soundtrack for the game, picking the music and things like that. I wish I could recall that off the top of my head. I'll look it up and throw a link in the show notes. But what a fun soundtrack to wear with a pair of headphones. I mean, it's just very appropriate music, and just when the action kicks in, the music kicks in. It's almost like they planned it that way. But
almost.
It's terrible fun. It's straight up Doom. You're basically running around smashing stuff and with lots of pretty colors and crazy firearms.
Well, it's still such an it is awesome and striking and slightly terrifying that it is still a sort of crack. It's an adrenaline rush, and it's cranked out, and you'll just want to play it over and over and over again.
The multiplayer apparently isn't all that hot yet, but there will be a patch rolling down here, I think, in a month. They just announced,
sounds about right.
Like today they announced it, and it will bring a capture the flag style game as well as a capture and hold style gameplay as well. And those are like basics you should have in any multiplayer game anyway.
Right.
Deathmatch is deathmatch, but when you have like team goal style shenanigans for a game like Doom or any of the first person shooter stuff, it can be awfully enjoyable. And I will leave it at that. That is my audio goodness of the week right there. The Doom soundtrack. Doom!
Some crazy Blu-ray releases in the last week or two. If you're into anime, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, John Wayne and Robert Montgomery, and They Were Expendable. The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T, which I'm surprised is not a Criterion release, just because it's essentially a live-action Dr. Seuss movie. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
About being forced to learn how to play piano. Point Break. Unfortunately, the 2015 version just came out on 4K, which I suppose is slag. I think it got like 0.4 stars on Rotten Tomatoes. Actually,
that's just something that doesn't even hit my radar. I'm just like, I have life.
Well, I the first one, like, it's a profoundly guilty.
Oh, pleasure. No, the first one? Yeah, man. It had Swayze in it, dude. I mean, jeez. Anything with Swayze in it, I'll watch.
And Keanu. Hey, and it was rocking. You know, the 1991 Point Break was rocking 68% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What do they know?
The 2015 version of Point Break.
Groupthink.
9% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I won't spend another 6 seconds thinking about this.
Well, okay. Coen Brothers' Hail Caesar came out on Blu-rays last week.
Oh, cool.
Zootopia came out on Blu-ray. Fantastic movie if you like children or have to deal with children.
Yeah. No, kids are great.
Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 came out on 4K.
Those were like some of the very first, at least the original Ghostbusters was like one of the very first 4K streaming titles you could find on Netflix.
Yeah.
And hopefully it looks better than that. It didn't look so hot.
That would be nice.
That needs some TLC, man.
The 1996 version of Independence Day in 4K.
Another movie I doubt I'll ever watch again. Maybe I missed something. Maybe that movie was a lot better than I remember, but I don't remember it being bad, but I'm just like...
It obviously didn't do anything for you.
People love that movie.
Yeah,
there's clearly a lot in it I either ignored or I was busy. So
Vinyl, the complete first season, is now out on Blu-ray, which I would be really tempted...
Is that the HBO show?
That's the HBO show, the one about the 70s record company. I would be curious to see that in 4K just so I could get my face 4 inches from the screen and look at some of the stuff going on with the set designs, because I do that sometimes. And then coming out tomorrow, man, you know, such an odd collection of stuff. Star Trek, a bunch of Star Trek's the original series re-releases, Matt Damon's Green Zone from 2010, which I suspect is coming out just in time for the Bourne movie. But Rollerball's being re-released again. Eddie the Eagle is on 4K. The Blues Brothers double feature, which I do not recommend.
There was only one Blues Brothers movie.
Yes. We don't talk about the other one.
What other ones?
Oh, dear.
Things I don't need to know.
Star Trek Into Darkness in 4K. I think they just re-release Jaws, Jaws 2, and Jaws 3 in Blu-ray every couple of years because they can. I've never quite figured that one out.
Classics.
Classics. So not a huge week for Blu-ray releases this week.
Well, I did fire up the Pirate Bay just to take a look at the top 100 list real quick to see what was going on up there. And apparently there's a show called Game of Thrones that was on apparently a new episode last night. And,
yeah, I watched it.
You would never guess what files at the top of the list this on Monday morning.
Ballers.
Ballers.
Which is a different HBO series.
Actually, the top three files on one of the biggest file sharing sites in the world, they're all Game of Thrones. Well, actually, two of them are episode 8, done by two different people. Or I don't know what the hell it is. Something. Re-encoding for your pleasure. There we go.
Well, that's why I have HBO now. So I don't have to steal. Makes me happy.
No. This is convenience. Convenience.
Although I would like to have the files offline. Every so often, during a battle scene or something, there'll be a glitch on the streaming stuff. But that's a universal complaint across all streaming video services. But, oh my goodness. So we were talking a minute or two ago before I took us on a long, divergent conversation, which led us eventually through Doom, Blu-ray releases, and torrent sites.
Yes!
Something
all of our favorite things.
They came out last week before E3, the death of the Xbox One DVR, which like last August, we were promised that 2016, the Xbox would have DVR capability for recording over the air broadcast. That's dead.
Never was born.
Never was born. It's gone.
It died in some back room somewhere.
You know, so if you're emotionally traumatized by that, don't be, because Mediasonic's Homeworks HW180 STB is still $30.
Single tuner, mm-hmm. Pretty basic, but $30. Yeah. You know, you can't you plug an antenna in, stick a thumb drive in it, and done.
Yeah. If you need multiple
channels,
scan. Buy another, you know, Mediasonic Homeworks and stack it on top. If you want to get fancy, you can get TiVo's Romeo over-the-air HD DVR and streaming media player, which is $75 plus a 15-month service. I think due to our basic cheapness, both Robert and I are firmly in the Mediasonic Homeworks camp. Also, I don't think you don't. I've never.
No. I wouldn't buy the Homeworks unless you just desperately needed a single tuner DVR, because that's pretty limited. When you only have one tuner, you're stuck only watching one thing, or watching one thing and not being able to record something else if you need to decode a file you're watching. TiVo's Romeo that you mentioned, their 500 gig model, $75 plus 15 a month for service. I would say skip that as well and get their 1 terabyte version with lifetime service for $400. And that as a total package for a 4-tuner DVR is going to be super tough to beat.
So the TiVo Romeo is a 4-tuner DVR?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's I really like it for that. And I would skip anything that involves monthly service fee. I would just pay. I'd do the 1 terabyte version for $400, be done with it.
Right.
And they've changed owners recently, so they're now basically, or they've purchased the company they used to get media or channel guide information from.
Right.
So, that's a good one. My other favorite, too, for a dual tuner setup is from Channelmaster. They have their DVR Plus. Terrific. Very thin design. It's like a half an inch thick or 3/4 inch thick. Little slab.
Okay.
You can add your own drive. You can buy it preloaded with a drive. Great interface. Also includes Sling TV support, and a few other streaming app options as well. So terrific. But as soon as I saw that $400 price tag for lifetime, 1 terabyte of storage for the TiVo Romeo OTA, they're over the air. That makes it pretty damn tempting, all things considered. For the amount of storage, 4 tuners, that's a good household OTA DVR. Over the air.
The Channel Master?
Good for 2 tuners, and there's some good pricing options there. But otherwise, if you have $400, I would just get that TiVo Romeo OTA.
Okay.
With the terabyte of storage. So basically, it's 4 tuners, and you're good to go. Especially if you live somewhere with a lot of over the air channels.
Right.
That will make life super.
So basically, the
enjoyable.
Romeo is either $75 plus $180 a year forever.
Totally.
$400 flat out with no service.
Yeah, I tend to avoid monthly fees for things if I can. Because if you're going to have it for more than a couple years, it's always worth it to get it with the service bundled. And then there's no more fee related to it.
Speaking of which, if you don't own your cable modem, go buy a cable modem today.
Yeah, or call your company and find out if they no longer charge you for it.
Right.
And, oh, we just haven't updated your account for 6 months. My friend had that. We went out and bought a new cable modem, got it all hooked up. And they're like, we called up the company to activate it. And they're like, oh, I mean, we don't charge for those anymore. Oh, yeah, we have been charging for the last 6 months, but we would gladly send you one for free. And I'm like, oh, you tell me this now. But, yeah. Good point, though.
That Rollerball Blueberry is apparently like a limited edition from the 1975 James Caan version of Rollerball, not the Guilty Pleasure, also 2011 Rollerball remake.
There's only the James Caan version. I'm sorry.
That sells. That Blu-ray sells for $65.
It's a keeper.
It's a keeper. I
that no, the Blu-ray or the DVD?
The Blu-ray.
Yeah. I don't think any disc should be that much. That's... Well, apparently, it's limited, though, apparently.
The first version of it sold out a long-ass time ago, and they've just re-released it. You know, maybe I should sell a pair of headphones.
30 cents worth of plastic.
So I can watch Rollerball over and over again and terrify my children just like my old man did when I was younger.
Yeah, it was a scary, intense movie.
Well, yes.
Intense for a youngin'. So.
Not as intense as Soylent Greens, but that's a whole other conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. WWDC, that's a Worldwide Developer Conference, Apple's annual gathering, which is pretty much all software now. You know, the hardware stuff isn't going to come till later this year. Which reminds me, headphone apocalypse is officially rolling hard. The 3.5 millimeter jack completely missing off of Motorola's new Moto Z smartphones last week. I got to get hands on with
go
those.
Bluetooth
and the new Lenovo Lightning. Tango phone
or USB 3.
Yeah, USB. It's going to basically be type. They'll include a Type C 3.5 millimeter headphone adapter in the box.
Great dongles. So, here's a free dongle.
If you have something to say about headphone jacks and whether or not you want them on your equipment, feel free to email ask@avxl.com.
What a beautifully simplistic port. How could they be messing with this thing?
It's one less hole to put in the case, and it's true. One. It's, you know, they might save 2 or 3 cents per unit. Who knows? Maybe it costs them like 40 cents to put the.
There's
the
probably a 1 cent per port licensing fee.
Oh, my goodness.
For the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack.
Oh. Anyhow, Sling TV is coming to the Apple TV.
Really? Cool.
Fox Sports Go, NBA 2K, Minecraft Story Mode, and Sketch Party are all new apps. Apple TV says tvOS now has 6,000 apps. 1,300 of them are all about video. Another big announcement for the tvOS or the Apple TV. These two things are one and the same. Live tune-in, partner network. You'll basically be able to launch live television from partner networks or people that are competing. Competing is not the right word. No one really competes with Apple. Partnering.
Yes.
Partnering with Apple. Much more interesting to me is that they have now redone the iPhone remote app, and it will now allow you to do Siri voice search. Big news about Siri this week also is that Siri is being open to third-party developers, so Siri functionality will be available to pretty much all the apps on all the platforms, which makes me happy. YouTube search is now coming to Siri, so if you're cat video with Roomba and shark drum, you can now ask Siri to search for that.
Excellent.
Yeah. And single sign-on, which is a big deal. If you ever find yourself like... you know, I download something, I sign into it, then I switch to some other thing and I sign into that, and I switch to some other thing, I sign into that. So the idea is that, you know, HBO, NBC, ABC, ESPN, whatever your different apps are from the big networks, you'll be able to sign in once, not have to sign into them all over again. The live tune-in includes ESPN and Disney. There's a dark mode if you don't like the bright app grid background.
Thank goodness.
Automatic download of apps between iOS and tvOS. I'm not entirely sure. I think that's a good thing, but I also have to manage children dealing with the Apple TV.
On the phone side of things, anything that just allows for automated updating of multiple apps,
yeah,
just take care of that in the background for me. Thank you.
So
I really need to see the new Apple TV. I haven't actually played
with
it. Come
over to my house.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
We've been running it.
I'm still rolling the old little puck, and I love that thing.
It's a lovely puck.
I use no other Apple products regularly, but that Apple TV, man. Give me my sports streaming, MLB, all the local stations.
Yeah.
It's really a nice box.
I just wish if Amazon Prime was on it. You know, it's there's a lot of things I like about the Roku box, too, but because we started with Apple TV so early, we have so much content tied up in it. If you've been thinking about the Internet of Things and wondering when more control is going to come out, or you were excited about Google Home a couple weeks ago, Apple announced their Home app for iOS 10, which is essentially the place to go to control your house, you know, garage doors, thermostats, window shades, security lights, outlets, fans, sensors, locks, humidifiers. So hopefully it works the way it should. It's been interesting to watch all the battles going back and forth. A lot of name calling between like Nest, which seems to be somewhat smaller and you know, they pushed out the original Nest CEO. The new CEO is like, Nest, Google's not selling Nest. The Dropcam CEO was basically like selling Dropcam to Nest/Google was the dumbest thing I ever did. It's been interesting to watch the kind of back and forth on that, which is my long-winded way of saying, if you're thinking about investing a lot of money in home automation,
do it yourself.
Do it yourself and feel free to
save
wait.
A lot of money.
Well, we have a friend of ours who
creates some jobs.
Who was looking at Control 4, and he's like, well, you know, and it's Control 4 is really amazing, you know, as is any professionally installed system that costs an arm and a leg to have installed, or should be.
It can do a lot.
It can do a lot. But, you know, anytime you add something or want to change something, you have to have the installer come to your house and make those changes. And that's a significant, you know, barrier to entry as far as I'm concerned. Not that I had the money to buy any of it in the first place.
I'm just kind of looking forward to see the hub technology become more ubiquitous for folks. So right. You can at least get a taste of it, try it out. Things like those new Samsung TVs that'll feature the built-in hub support. Mm-hmm. So even if you just want to try it with a few items to see if it's even applicable for your home environment or something maybe you really want to dive into, at right. least just get your feet wet without having to make a serious investment. And you start with something simple, you know, turn the lights on and off or, you know, have it when you turn on the TV, the curtains close and the lights dim or, you know, something basic.
I have to admit
the kettle kicks on just in time for halftime. And well,
I was building this large climbing apparatus to help sort of, you know, burn energy off of the children and give them something to do in the backyard. And I found myself once again in the blinds because, you know, all the Levalore blinds in my house we bought 4 years ago. They're all dying, all within, like, the space of 6 months. So apparently they know you can get, like, 4 years of putting them up and pulling them down, and they disintegrate, which is profoundly frustrating, but...
okay.
So, well, you know, like, literally, like...
It's terrible.
Yeah, like, you know, four different sets of these blinds in my house have died in the space of 4 months, and it's like, you know, one goes, and you're like, okay, I can live without them in this room. And then, like, all the rest of them...
Is this your projection room?
No, well, yeah, one of them's in the projection room that died.
Well, you gotta have darkness there.
Yes.
I understand your...
Yes.
Your window covering needs.
Also,
suddenly.
You know, you want to have the windows where the hell covered with the blackout shades. Well, I'm bringing this up, right? Obviously for the projector room, but also because to keep the children asleep longer, you keep the sun out of the room.
You just
this
don't
isn't
duct tape
you're
their head.
With.
No.
No.
That's not. Is that...
The duct tape always seems like a good idea, but it never works the way you want it to. But the I bring this up because once again, I found myself, you know, playing with the automatic blinds with the built-in battery-powered motor. And those just seem like I want those hooked into my Harmony home control. So I hit the button and the blackout shades drop as the lights go off, as the screen comes down, as the Blu-ray player fires
up. That's what I think. Companies like Control 4, there's always going to be a company like that, right, in order to provide that, just the service to people who want it all done for them. But for a lot of other folks, like for your, you needed a trigger, probably a 12-volt trigger to activate that particular function. And you'll be able to get a module that you can just slap right in that'll tie into the Internet of Things and work with any of these compatible hub devices. And that's going to be pretty sweet. And I was just thinking about the last projection screen I installed was a motorized version. And that would be, we were just talking about how, oh yeah, have the lights dim and maybe the curtains close when you turn the TV on, but it can also be tied into things like, you know, if you have a motorized screen that you only used manually, it might be a good idea to tie that in as well and have that come down and retract per use, so to speak. But anyway.
My wife doesn't get really excited about, you know, she's probably even less interested in home automation than most people. But one of the funniest facial expressions I ever saw on her face was the first time I hit the button to play the Apple TV and the projection screen automatically slid down. And she was just like, oh, I don't have to press another button. No, honey, you don't have to press another button.
No, basic automation. I'm also shocked, too, at how many people with just regular cable and satellite set-top boxes don't program the remotes that they come with for basic control, either of the AVR or of the TV's volume or of it takes like 5 minutes. It can just simplify use. Usage.
Just simplify it.
Usage. Hey, speaking of which, last week I took a tour of Samsung's brand new user experience and user interface lab.
So is this where they basically watch people watching TV to figure out how they watch TV so they can make better stuff to help people watch TV?
Ridiculously detailed. Actually, I gave you a picture, that very top picture of the sequence of photos I have in our doc here. Shows the control room, mission control of where they spy on you when you're sitting in the mock living room with one of their products. And there's probably about a dozen cameras in that room looking at what your hands are doing and among other things. But so the focus really was, and this is a facility that's probably a year and a half old. These are the folks that do they bring in people from the streets that generally fall into one of a several categories of users. You know, they try to cover things like to whatever gets them quickest to the 80% of all users out there,
right?
In terms of making design choices and interface choices and things like that. And then when they finally think they have something that's presentable, then they use the user interface and experience lab, or they bring in up to, in the last case, we were talking about the new KS series that's coming out right now for Samsung. Just for the new KS series, they brought in about 200 different people, and everything from open the box and actually take the product out of the box and set it up to it's sitting in the living room. It's connected to every device you could possibly think of that's common. Cable, satellite, set-top boxes, game consoles, portable players, everything. And then just watch how people use it. And going over topics like the evolution of the remote over the last few years was pretty fascinating. I mean, they have it down to, we realize that X number of our customers didn't even know what these three buttons were for, and these three buttons were required to do these separate functions in slightly different looking menus. This year we've got it down to one button that brings up a simplified menu and you could just kind of see what they do and how they do it, and it was awesome. A good look behind the scenes in terms of how focused they are or can be on things you might not think much of or wonder how the hell they made this choice or that choice, or why is the 2016 remote such a thin little thing with like four buttons on it that seems like, oh, this is too ridiculous. And it was really cool at all. And then we followed that up with a tour of the Nanosys lab in Santa Clara.
Ooh, yeah.
Or nearby. That is the company that makes the quantum dot crystals. And we had a wonderful behind-the-scenes tour of that, going through the lab process, which was fascinating. One, apparently, quantum dot materials in their raw state should not be inhaled. So I would say the biggest biggest point they kept making throughout the entire tour of the facility was how everything
should you break the screen?
Everything's suspended in liquids. So nothing is actually in contact with everything. But on top of that, everyone's got gloves on. Everything's in sealed rooms. We took it from the point of where they get the base size of the crystal that determines its output color, to the special coatings they put on it, to their testing and refinement processes, and the different chemistries they use for different customers and things like that. And then, of course, we had some side-by-side time with the new LG OLED. It was their E6, the brand new E6 OLED, which is a fantastic design, by the way. The super thin glass back OLED TV, side by side with a prototype KS9800 full array local dimming, and just to do some color comparisons and some spectral back and forth, and overall a good experience, and just a good Bay Area company that just seems to be on the right track in terms of being in, taking a product that they really, for years, decades, we had, like, what the hell do we do with this stuff, to creating something with it that's now a marketable product.
We have a
market.
It's
pretty neat.
We have
a market. Looking forward, if there was any future tech, clearly it's something called the QLED, or a quantum dot LED, or basically...
Wait, Sharp did that like 4 years ago.
No, this is, I don't know what the hell Sharp was doing 4 years ago. Making yellow pixels, that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
This is not that. Effectively, instead of using LEDs and then taking some of the waste light of the LED and turning it in and using quantum dots to create, you know, other colors, why not have the quantum dot in that color itself? And they're basically calling this the QLED, and they're saying in 3 to 5 years we'll have displays. I have read reports from Consumer Reports and others, actually, that says Samsung will likely have a demo of this display technology in the next 2 years. So I if you wonder why Samsung hasn't done much with OLEDs outside of their phones, they're probably the biggest OLED producer in the world, actually, if you consider how many mobile devices have their displays in them. But I think this will be one of the next big flat panel technologies to finally get us, if something gets us away from the LED backlit LCD,
right?
And OLED can't get the brightness and the performance up to snuff. I mean, they got black level and they have good saturation, but some other color characteristics and absolute brightness, that's something OLED kind of struggles with. This QLED technology could be driven effectively very hard and without any degradation, and that could lead to some very, very impressive thin display systems. And I'll be curious to see. And I want to see a prototype of an active matrix display in the next couple of years. So it'll happen. I'll let you know. I promise. I'm not hiding that, without a doubt. But that was a good tour day of stuff I mean, between the user interface, user experience stuff at Samsung's test lab, and then the Nanosys group working really in a commercial lab environment, but a terrific... Jason Hartlove over at Nanosys, president of the company. He's just a very knowledgeable person and a good person just to talk shop with about display tech.
He's big in Pure Light.
Hmm?
He's big on that Pure Light.
Oh.
I'm just saying.
He's seen,
man,
things.
Those pictures, if you haven't seen them, go over to heronfidelity.com. We got a link in the show notes at avxl.com. If you're not subscribed to AVXL, do us a favor. Go to avxl.com or search for us on iTunes. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to the Google Play Store for podcasts as soon as we get approved. And by the way, if you haven't, you might want to consider supporting us at patreon.com/avxl. We are brought to you by your viewer contributions. Y'all make it possible for us to make this show. You pay for the bandwidth, you pay for the website, and you'll pay for us. Oh, you'll pay. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, we love doing this. We'll sit in a room and talk for hours.
True.
But we'd much rather do it in public for you, and to make that possible without us having to spend hours and hours chasing down advertisements, we ask you to donate through patreon.com/AVXL. And if you're already a supporter, thank you so much. And, hey, even if you can't afford to donate, keep listening. Make sure you're subscribed and send us your questions to ask@AVXL.com. Which brings us to Dave, who writes in to ask@avxl.com. I've read that a Blu-ray drive on a PC is already capable of playing 4K Blu-rays. You just need software player that has 4K compatibility. Please let me know if this is correct so I can start my 4K catalog. Well, in theory, we've heard that LG BDXL drives made in late 2015 and later can read 4K discs, but I have not seen this myself. And the vast majority of Blu-ray drives will not detect a UHD Blu-ray disc. In theory, if they had a firmware update, they should be able to read the new discs. That said, even if your Blu-ray drive could read the disc, your old 2014 or earlier Blu-ray drive, you still need HDCP 2.2 and HDMI 2.0 on your GPU to handshake to your TV.
There aren't many GPUs that do that, actually.
Yeah, it's a real short list.
Well, that GTX 1080, I think that'll do it.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll get one in for testing.
And, yeah, the 1070 and the 1080, if you're thinking about a new gaming card or home theater PC gaming card, not for just basic video playback, but if you want to do gaming on your home theater PC, 1070 and the 1080 are redefining the kind of performance per dollar, and the new Radeon card coming out in a few weeks is pretty amazing too. The 480.
I need it for Doom. That'll be my justification.
Your justification.
I need to play on Ultra.
Well, if you're 1080p,
60 frames per second,
get a 950. You know, or wait until the 1070s and 1080s are shipping.
Going Nvidia.
Going
crazy.
Well, that's it. The N50 is the Nvidia. That's the about as much card as most people will need for 1080p. But along with the Blu-ray drive that can read 4K disc, you need HDCP 2.2 and HDMI 2.0 on your GPU to handshake to your TV, and you need playback software that'll work with the DRM on the discs, which doesn't exist, not even from RedFox.bz, formerly known as Slysoft. Yo!
Slysoft!
CyberLink, by the way, CyberLink Power TVD is still our prime choice for playing Blu-rays on a home theater PC if you don't rip and encode them to a local server, which makes it so much easier to browse movies. We have also heard rumors that CyberLink is working on a UHD Blu-ray version.
CyberLink will play ISOs. It will.
It should.
Although not encrypted, but...
Yeah.
You know what to do.
And if you don't, go to RedSoft. And by the way, don't steal Blu-rays. Don't buy Blu-rays,
rip
them and resell them.
Well, set a budget.
Yeah. Buy media.
Look for sales.
People in Hollywood need to eat, too.
Hit up your local stores.
But yeah, even if you can read that 4K Blu-ray, nobody can actually play it.
4K Blu-ray and PCs do not mix currently.
No.
It's terrible.
Oh, my goodness. Jose Fabre tweets at Robert Heron. Hi, I'm trying to set the contrast on the LED set. It seems to be difficult. What's the easiest way to set it? Thank you.
Good old contrast.
Contrast. Contrast is important.
It is. That's basically what determines the absolute brightness of the display. Well, right. Short of the backlight, but and many other things, too. But this also kind of becomes a good follow-up for that DIY calibration discussion we had an episode or two ago. A lot of these low-cost kits that include just a meter to read, by the way, it's going to use your Blu-ray or DVD player as a source device, and you want to make sure that's set up right. You just need to check it out. And when you're checking out your Blu-ray or DVD player, set the TV to something like cinema or movie preset in order to minimize all the processing, to make sure the levels are in the ballpark, so to speak. Then you can use something like a Spears & Munsell disc or that AVS 709 HD disc, which is free. They have specific patterns, including one specifically for contrast. It is excellent. On the AVS 709 HD disc, it's called the white clipping pattern. Effectively, this is just showing you a series. Hopefully, you will see a white background with a series of gray bars that should be animated to flash on and off. And you want to see as many of them as you can, and generally with the contrast setup on most TVs, you'll turn it down to about 50%, and then you'll increase it until just before those peak white levels disappear on that test pattern, or if you start to notice any shifting in color, like suddenly the gray bars turn green or pink, turn it down 5% below wherever you were seeing that.
Right.
And that's effectively it. It's generally a setting you don't have to play around with much. Generally, 100% or maximum contrast is usually where your Vivid preset is going to go. However, at that level, you will notice that on that white clipping pattern, you'll actually see the brightest details, the highest stepped grayscale steps in that test pattern actually disappear or become indistinct from the background. And ideally, you would want to turn down the contrast until you can see everything on that pattern. Technically, there is a cutoff point on that stepped grayscale for the white clipping. It shouldn't go to maximum, but you never know. Whoever authored the material may have said, you know what, I'm going to let this overshoot on this one scene because, oh, there's some clouds in the background that I just want to get extra detail out of or something. Who knows? But technically, on that white clipping test pattern on that disc, you should see all of the steps all the way up And if not, you definitely want to try the contrast setting. If you find that the contrast setting isn't doing anything, doesn't seem to do anything no matter what you do to it, there could be other settings involved that might be messing up stuff. There might be a setting in the Blu-ray player, or that's why I was suggesting earlier to just simply start with the TV's movie picture preset, where it hopefully is doing very little,
right,
and the color setup's pretty close, and your grayscale and your contrast setup are probably in the ballpark. And then use that test disc to verify that the player's doing everything all right and it isn't clipping your levels. Like in the case of the PlayStation 3, it actually had a white level, a super white setting, where if you didn't turn on that super white setting in the disc playback or the media playback features, you would never see any levels, the brightest of the white details in the test patterns, above that safe point.
Right.
So that was one case where, in order to see the pattern properly when it's being displayed on the TV, you actually had to go into the player and make a change. So anyway, that was that. That is how you do proper contrast setup. Effectively, don't turn it up too high. Turn it down. Turn it down halfway. Turn it up until things start to get wonky. Turn it back down a little bit. Done.
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 Oh, my goodness.
Maybe we'll talk about brightness next time.
Well, brightness and contrast are kind of killer.
But that was how, we were just talking about how, with some of the cheapest meters out there, packages available, you're actually using your Blu-ray player or something, a disc-based player, as your source media or your source device. And like when I do calibrations for TVs and stuff, I actually have a hardware box that's specifically designed to spit out clean video at specific resolutions, specific formats, built-in test patterns and things like that. It makes it super simple to have a box like that. But, you know, a DVD or a Blu-ray disc in a player you already own is, of course, going to be just way more affordable and all part of that do-it-yourself nature, so to speak. But getting contrast right is good. You don't want it up too much. I think between contrast and sharpness, those are like the two things I always check first on displays when I'm mucking about in the controls, so to speak.
Yeah.
Not too sharp. Nope.
Matt, North Carolina asks, any new offerings that support Bluetooth headsets or any decent small footprint aftermarket devices? So for the majority of people, if they want to get their Bluetooth headset attached to a television, you're going to have to find analog outputs from your TV and use something like a Vontree. Makes a BTTC 400Q WHT, which is a Bluetooth audio transmitter. It's like Bluetooth 3.0. I'd prefer Bluetooth 4.0, but I prefer Bluetooth 4.0 for everything. And what that'll do is allow you to take the input, the analog input from your television and output it to your Bluetooth headset or your Bluetooth headphones. I don't know of a lot. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of HDTVs that are offering connectivity to Bluetooth headphones yet.
All of them do. All the premium TVs.
Has it been
that
long
wireless?
Since I've been buried inside of a TV menu?
Apparently.
You know, I live this trajectory lifestyle.
On the value end of TVs, where you might have Wi-Fi,
right,
you might not have Bluetooth. But on the more premium models, where they're just stuffing everything in there, most of them have Bluetooth nowadays.
Will output to your
headset. I use them with either stuff like Riva's Turbo X or their S model, or my headphones or whatever.
Watch it. Nobody's outside of like sneaking around on the
great
TVs you review. I haven't been near a high end TV in years.
It works awesome. These two TVs do, too. They have the Bluetooth. These TVs will also do all sorts of crazy stuff. They'll even act like a wireless access point if you really need to. You can plug, like, Ethernet into it, turn the TV into a wireless access point, and then your local devices can drive off that or whatever.
Should you be in the cheap seats like I am, what you're looking for is a Bluetooth.
You got
transmitter.
Your projector rolling, though.
I've had that projector forever.
True.
So we've determined that I no longer have any familiarity with the inner workings of Bluetooth audio on high-end televisions.
Bluetooth works great. It's sometimes on these older TVs, the apps that I'm just like, what the hell?
Have there been any...
That's why I want a separate box for my apps nowadays.
I just gave up. I tried for a while, and then I just gave up on the idea of using the television apps. Like I haven't.
They stagnate. It doesn't matter how much you pay for these TVs. Generally speaking, the apps tend to stagnate on those closed platforms.
Right.
I'm really hoping with Sony and LG switching over to Android TV for their set tops. Oh, not LG. Excuse me. They have WebOS, which I hope they continue to go on there. But specifically for like Sony and having Android on the back end, I only hope the update situation is that it continues well into the future. And you're just, throughout the life of the product, you're given more and more, like the Android operating system, you're given more and more access, or access to more and more apps and things like that.
I got to say, the NVIDIA Shield Android TV box is fantastic. It's not cheap. It's expensive.
However, their high-end one that has the 500 gig hard drive in it, that makes an ideal box for running the network tuners and the project that the folks over at Silicon Dust are rolling. They have their new software package that will run, actually, if you have the 500 gig drive version of that NVIDIA Shield, the software will simply run on that and turn it into a DVR connecting to all the OTA network tuners that you may want to throw at it. So
I will say, before you buy an NVIDIA Shield for Android TV, do two things.
But that's the only reason I would buy that. Otherwise.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was starting to say. Like, be very careful, because it's a walled garden in terms of the apps you actually get. You know, you don't get the whole Play Store.
Not Android.
No. It is Android, but it's not. Kind of like tvOS is iOS, but it's not. So, you know, there may be applications you want that are not available, much like tvOS and iOS. Francois says, hi, I've been looking at the new 4K and HDR TVs to replace a 46-inch 1080p TV I got in 2012. Which one should I pick and why? Any specific recommendations in the 46-inch range?
Boy. 46-inch TVs. I wouldn't even... I mean, unless you're just going for super premium.
Right.
Sure, you'll end up with a 4K TV probably at that size. But otherwise, I'm trying to think. There are, if you can get over the whole 4K thing at 40, if it's below 50 inches, I'm not even thinking 4K.
Yeah.
Forget it. So with that in mind.
I mean, like, Vizio makes a 40-inch 4K TV.
It ain't worth it. That one ain't, no.
Yeah. I mean, Samsung makes a 48-inch 4K,
But it really just
UN48
kind of goes
6700
back
series
to whatever your budget is. Mm-hmm. And for right now, in 1080p screens, TCL is one I would always consider, especially if you want Roku. Like, you're talking about good app experiences. Having Roku built right into the freaking TV. They have a 40. How big is this one? TCL, they have they have a 48-inch version. I got a typo right there. Well, they have a 40-inch version for $250, and I think that's great. Sony's new 650D series, too. They have a 48-inch. 120 hertz smart TV that'll be with Android, $475, so about $10 an inch.
It gets pricey.
It depends. Now you jump up into, like, I wouldn't even look at anything under 55 inches in 4K. So.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing.
Save some money. Don't worry about the 4K part.
I mean,
get a good 1080p screen.
If you desperately first of all, if you want, 4K on a 46-inch television, you can make it happen. Getting HDR on a 46-inch television is not going to happen.
No, no.
Well, it's funny,
separate,
right?
Separate those two things for right now.
I mean, Samsung, LG, Hisense, Vizio, Scepter, LG, Sony.
Every one of those companies.
All of them make 43 to 49-inch 4K televisions. Almost none of them, 43 to 49-inch televisions, like, almost none of them have HDR.
No. It's...
And to me, there's no point at this. If you want 4K UHD, or if you want, one, I say yes, get a 4K TV with HDR. Two, make sure it's at least 55 inches.
Okay, I'll throw this out there for another high-end option, 49-inch, the KS8000, Samsung's. Was it $1,300 right now?
Yeah.
Still, if that suddenly it's like nothing, and I hear like 40-some-inch screen and over $1,000, I'm suddenly like going, okay, what am I doing here exactly? Maybe not, but yeah. That's going to look beautiful. It's going to put out 1,000 nits of peak brightness.
which is stupid.
It's
going to
have
bright.
Fantastic color. I saw the KS8000 over at Costco. It looked beautiful. And you get that Internet of Things hub functionality, too, if you want all that stuff. But likewise, I mean, you think about $1,300 versus something like that. That TCL or even that Sony, was it the 48W650D? It was $475. Look at that. It's $455 right now. $454 for the 48-inch version. And it has built-in Wi-Fi, get your streaming on. You know what? Right. I wonder if that version has Android in it. It may not, actually. I might be wrong on that. But
yeah.
But
so
still,
basically,
it's got its smart TV stuff. And
the KS8000, the 49-inch KS8000 4K television is about as low as you'd go. And that is that HDR? That's HDR.
Oh, yeah. That's the full-blown experience at just under 50 inches. But if the screen size is too big, at that point, I would just draw a line in the sand and say, just don't even worry about 4K.
Right. Get 1080p.
Yeah. And your options will open way up. There's tons of affordable options.
I'd also say unless you're physically restricted by the size of the room or a piece of a furniture, you know, if you're looking at 4K, you know, if you're 8 feet from the screen, get a 65-inch screen. If you can bolt it to the wall or put it on a piece of furniture, you may think 49 inches is huge and unreasonable, but get a bigger image, get a bigger screen up there. It'll make your life better.
Yep. I usually just measure whatever the width of the space you have available is, and that's about the screen size you'll be able to fit in there nowadays. So,
just saying.
Yes.
I'm still kind of like amazed that I didn't know about the Bluetooth headphone connectivity. I'm shocked and embarrassed.
I didn't use it for a long time, but lately I find myself just constantly hooking to a TV and bringing the audio outside. Or
it's time. I've been circling buying a new AVR for the last 6 months.
And that I don't need at the moment. I need some new.
Just on the cusp of needing one, but that's a conversation for next week.
I need to do the HDR upgrade to my room.
Are you going to buy one of the new Xboxes that were announced this morning?
No,
One S, the smallest Xbox ever. The other big news that came out of Microsoft's announcement today, Xbox Scorpio, 4K VR ready, 60 hertz rendering. Microsoft says uncompressed pixels, the highest quality pixels anyone has ever seen.
Project Scorpio. Remember the Simpsons episode with Mr. Scorpio?
Good old Project Scorpio.
Now, that sounds like what these consoles probably should have been, but, you know, there's only so much you can do to keep a piece of hardware within budget. I'm really looking forward to seeing what that will do.
That was
Christmas of 2017 when it's released
to
for
Scorpio.
To put
that statement into context, there was one of the things Microsoft said is like, well, you know, these are the consoles that developers wanted us to make. And it's like, so basically you're telling everybody that bought an Xbox One, which won't be a DVR, by the way, that this is the console Microsoft made because they couldn't build the console that the people who make games wanted them to make.
There's a point there. And I like the new S design, though, in terms of if what I've read is going to hold up and they can get rid of things like the power brick and have that integrated internally, the overall size of the console is decreased by 40%, or I've got that backwards, it's 40% of the original size. That just sounds like good stuff. Usually I find, too, it's easier to fix the second or third revisions of the hardware if you need to do a little repair work yourself. thinking of the iFixit folks there. But
Hi, iFixit.
I tend to find they've optimized the assembly of the product as well as the disassembly of the product the next time, or the go-rounds, so to speak, on the hardware. But, I'm a PlayStation guy when it comes to consoles. Otherwise, just give me my PC. That's all I really. If I could game on anything, it's going to be on a PC. I was watching Doom videos on YouTube the other day, and you can totally tell when somebody's playing on a console versus a PC player.
Right.
PC players are looking all over the freaking place, and the console players are always trying not to move the stick up and down to keep the view nice and flat. So as you strafe around, you can more easily shoot stuff. Anyway, that is that.
More death.
That
more mayhem.
Is that. I've got some OLED calibrations coming up this week. I'm looking forward to it.
Are you feeling comfortable with OLED calibrating now?
Yeah, I've done a few.
Okay.
They look good. They look bueno. Es bueno. I need to ping LG to see if they have any secret sauce to doing like a Dolby Vision calibration for their sets. They just don't provide that info for some reason. You got to like hold their hand, take them for a walk.
Hold their hand, whisper things into their ears, buy them ice cream.
I kind of believe that there may be no secret sauce. Just do it.
Just calibrate it, Heron.
Just do it, man.
Quit asking us for secrets that don't exist.
If there was something better, we would have told you already.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to AVXL Episode 16. For everybody that asked, we aim to be a weekly podcast. And our first hangout, for our first patron hangout, if you are a patron at one of the levels that gets a hangout, how about, you available Thursday morning?
I think so.
Thursday morning.
Okay.
Record a podcast, do a hangout.
All right.
It'll be amazing. You will get an email. Well, you should have an email by the time you hear this podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
There we go.
There you go.
As long as I don't ruin the suspension of my car between then and now.
Call me. I will pick you up.
I'm doing the easy end first. Taking my sweet time. I have proper pots.
Yeah, and I got to run new fuel line in my truck.
I think we should cut this podcast short.
Cut the podcast short, people.
Not short, but...
Well, it's been pretty lengthy.
Before I start... making a laundry list here of
automotive projects.
That and things I need to buy.
Remember, kids, buy new things. Buy them every 2 weeks. You never have to maintain them. That's the secret to happiness.
Jeez, yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that's something profoundly the opposite of my life. Oh, my goodness. We love your questions. Ask at avxl.com or tweet at avxl or at Robert Heron or at Patrick Norton.
I need to go ask Vizio. What's up? What's up with that P?
I have emailed Vizio. We are waiting for the answer on that. If you had a question about HDR10 updates for the Vizio P series, we are on that. We're waiting for a response back from Vizio.
That's I got $5. Says it ain't going to happen. No.
Don't be that guy, Robert.
I'd rather have the official word.
And yes, we are waiting for the official word. We are waiting for the official word from the
Vizio's
people that are official.
Talented PR agency.
Hey,
Jim, God, I love them.
Jim and the crew, y'all do right by us, and we appreciate that.
.com.
Oh, my goodness. And for people who asked for more information about headphones from CanJam, I am on that, and we will have that in next
cool,
episode.
Cool, man.
Yeah, well, there's gonna be a headroom, a HeadFi. Oh, my goodness. There's a sentence in my head. Headroom would be the headphone company that Till used to work at making headphone amplifiers. I am actually thinking, pardon me, I'm actually thinking of head-fi.org, which is the super awesome, amazing website, at head-fi.org, Jude and the crew over there. If you are into headphones and you've never been to this website, boy, it's going to be an expensive time for you. And yes, I will be at the, San Francisco Head-Fi meet on, July 16th. So.
Excellent.
Excellent.
I got out of jury duty. I'm happy.
Ladies and gentlemen, with that, I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Robert Aaron.
We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
On AVXL.